We met Mike Greenberg. He answered some of our questions, and one thing that he suggested to us is, in this day and age, everybody should have a podcast. So we decided, let's do it.
Hi, this is Mike Greenberg from ESPN, and you're listening to the Elder 118 Sports Show.
We were there, we stormed the court. It was awesome.
We stormed the court, Henry.
Our favorite flaming pile of garbage, Henry, Arizona State. Julian Harrell, if you're listening, fascinating story. You're a cool dude.
Honestly, you talk about the NFL abusing cheerleaders, they would be the lucky ones in Cleveland because they'd be facing the crowd, not having to actually watch the football on the field, which just causes people so much pain.
Henry with future, the analytics revolution.
You know, we were giving Vegas the work.
I think they've adjusted
the wheels. Yeah, I think probably they've been listening to the podcast and they realized they needed to set better lines. Bo is here, Andrew Bowen the first. Welcome in, my man. Thanks. And surprise guest, Gabe Schmidtlein. And special guest, Daniel Vickers, straight from Asheville, North Carolina.
Mike Greenberg, welcome to the Elder 118 Sports Show.
We consistently put off other things to do this podcast. So if you are a listener and have been listening to day one, since day one, you are a real one. We appreciate you. We love you. The Elder 118 Sports Show is now viral at Elder 118 Sports on Twitter, Elder 118 Sports Show on Facebook, and of course, subscribe on the podcast app to get all those episodes delivered to you every Monday and every Friday. Hello, everybody, and welcome on into the Elder 118 Sports Show. I am Parker Johnson, joined here, as always, by my co-host Henry Ettinger for episode 60 of season 2. Only 3 episodes left, I think, in the season. We got this Friday, and then 2 episodes next week. I'm leaving next Saturday, so after that, we're going to be done for season 2. So only a few episodes left, so, you know, stay tuned. They're going to be good, and obviously not too much longer. You'll be able to hear our lovely voices talk about sports every Monday and Friday. But that being said, Henry, how was your weekend? Memorial Day, long weekend. We skipped the episode, obviously, yesterday. Didn't seem like anybody was really complaining, so I'm assuming you guys were also enjoying your day off with nice weather.
Yeah, my weekend was good because of that. Nice weather. I played in a charity basketball game on Saturday. Basketball tournament, I only played in one game.
Oh, sad.
Which we lost, which is tough. I really think I set a record for myself in terms of points scored in the game. I think I had 31 points in the 24-minute running clock game, which was big. But my team still lost, which is unfortunate.
Is Henry LeBron James?
Apparently not. I did not set up my teammates well for success. I'm more like Kevin Durant, I suppose.
Ooh. Oh, shots being fired early on here. Wow.
I went and suffered and sat on the beach for like 4 or 5 hours with some friends after that. Got a little sunburned, of course. And then on Monday, was back at it outside all day playing a charity softball tournament. Where unfortunately we lost again on a walk-off. Heartbreaking. We won on a walk-off last year. The team we beat in the finals last year came back. Ooh. Beat us on a walk-off this year, which is tough. But it was a fun weekend. The weather was great all weekend, so got to be outside a ton, which I really enjoyed.
That's how it goes, man. Stay tuned for next year. The rubber match of the charity softball tournament, maybe. All sports fans know, you can't play 2 games and be tied 1-1 and leave it there. You just can't.
Yeah.
You just can't. It's not acceptable at all.
Gotta run it back.
Doesn't matter how tired you are. You gotta run it back for the rubber match. Yeah, dude, it was an awesome weekend. I also played a ton of sports. Some soccer, some basketball, some softball. Threw a nice 7 innings last night in our IM game. We're advancing to the quarterfinals where we could play you guys in the semifinals, I think. I don't know which team you're on, but
I believe you would play the B team because we have 3 dealt teams truly in the quarterfinals because the number 1 overall seed is basically,
and that's who we're playing next.
Yeah, is a dealt super team of seniors and grad students, and then yeah, my team we're the 3 seed, I think. So I think we're on the other side of the bracket from you guys.
Oh wow. Well,
the other team, the B guys upset the 4 seed, so that's who I think you guys would play next.
Yeah, it is. So, I don't know. A lot of intermingling in our respective semi-competitive sports leagues that we compete in. But anyway, that's what we've been up to. We'll talk about some of the professional sporting action that's actually been going on. We did a large pick 12, really, over the weekend. Hopefully you all saw that on Facebook. If you're listening to the show now and you don't like us on Facebook, you should definitely be doing that. I don't know why you aren't at this point, because you might be a little late to it. But we post a lot of updates there. The Twitter's kind of died out, if I'm being honest. But definitely stay tuned to the Facebook. We update it pretty regularly. Post all the episodes on there. We post all the updates, picks, whenever we don't release them on the show. So we put the Pick 12 up on the Facebook page on Saturday. And whenever we posted the episode. So it was a lot of picks, Henry. We picked a lot of random stuff, too. We picked the two NBA games that were on Friday. Those were both of the game sixes. I guess that was Friday and Saturday, I should say. As far as those games went, you got them both right. You picked the Cavs to cover the 7 in Game 6, and you picked the Warriors to cover the 11.5 in Game 6 of that series. Got both of those right. Those were, you know, games that were relatively close in both of them, but then each team pulled away at the end. I picked the Celtics to lose but cover the 7. Got that one wrong. And then I also picked the Warriors to cover. So in the pattern of a lot of the conference finals there, not really that close of games. At least at the end.
Yeah, they weren't at the end. The Cavaliers' Jeff Green came out of nowhere and really helped out. That was, you know, Game 6 was the game where Kevin Love got knocked out with a concussion. It was kind of unclear what was going to happen, and LeBron was playing a phenomenal game. I was worried he was going to run out of gas, but he did not. He managed to have enough gas in the tank to get the Cavs through. And yeah, and then the Rockets came out big in that Game 6. 39 points in the first quarter. I had some real hope, and then
scored like 23 in the second half.
Yeah, they scored something in the 20s in the second half, and I mean, really, even in the second quarter, they didn't score nearly as much as the way they did in the first quarter. Tough to watch.
Yeah, it was a tough one to watch. But that being said, we both got the pick right. Looked pretty bad at halftime when the Warriors were down 10, but what do you know? Third quarter, all of a sudden, they're covering that 11.5 point line. If we've learned anything on this show, it's pick the Warriors to cover when in doubt. So anyway, I went 1-1 in those NBA games. Henry went 2-0. Then we picked a bunch of NCAA softball. These were the super regionals, as they call them. This is essentially the Sweet 16, if you will, of the NCAA softball tournament. We had been following along a little bit because Northwestern did make it on to that softball tournament. They ended up losing to number 7 seed Georgia in the Athens regional last weekend. So we're following along with some of those games. The first game we picked was Kentucky and Oregon. This was a 1-16 matchup, but the 16 seed Kentucky actually won the first game. We both picked Oregon to turn it around. We both got that one right. The next game we picked was Washington and Alabama. This was a 5-12 matchup on Friday night. This was game 1. Washington won that one 3-2. Close game, but we both got that one right as well. And then the final game was the only game that we differed in. This was the 8-9 matchup, so a lot closer, tougher to pick. Arizona State was taking on South Carolina. Arizona State was the 8 seed, so they were at home. Arizona State got the win in that one. So Henry got that one right. I got that one wrong. Henry sweeps the NCAA softball tournament picks. Good job, Henry.
I know literally nothing about softball, so this only proves the randomness of picking these games.
Yeah. A friendly reminder, as sports betting will soon become legal. It's completely random. We have no idea what we're doing. Sometimes you do well, sometimes you don't. You're going to lose money in the long run if you do it. Sorry to all our gambling friends out there. Then we picked a bunch of soccer, Henry. So after you were undefeated after NBA and softball, 5-0. Soccer, as we know, maybe not necessarily your forte. We picked the Champions League final. We did both get that one right. Not exactly a tough pick to make. We both picked Real Madrid. And Real Madrid, 3-1 victors in that game. That was kind of a wild game, though, Henry. I know you watched some of this. I definitely watched the whole game. Did you have some thoughts after that one?
You know, the performance by the Liverpool goalkeeper was memorable and, unfortunately, memorable in a bad way. Gave up probably two of the worst goals I've ever seen from a keeper. Almost really the third one I thought was worse than the first one. The first one, he tried to roll the ball out quickly, and I think it was Benzema.
Mm-hmm.
Stuck out his foot and I could see how, like horrible goal, yes, but I could see how he was, you know, trying to go quickly, didn't see Benzema, whatever. I don't think I've seen a professional goalkeeper miss a shot as easy as the third one in a really long time. Like, maybe it was, you know, the knuckling of those shots and things like that with professional players, I get it's difficult. But right at him, and he hit it into the net. Like, I've seen them fumble it before, give up bad rebounds. But that was one of the worst goals I've seen in a long time from a professional keeper, especially in that big a stage.
I'm going to completely disagree on that. In the opposite sense, first of all, they were both just terrible mistakes. But I think the first one, in my opinion, was much worse because as much... So as a goalkeeper, you can definitely complain about the fact that Benzema technically isn't really supposed to stick his leg out there. That being said, that's still your fault for trying to roll it out when Benzema's literally standing right there. A bit unlucky that it bounced straight off his foot and directly into the side net without even touching it again, which was just like, it was a great finish, kind of. but definitely very lucky. And I think he thought that it was offsides. And I think Benzema also kind of thought it was offsides because he was just kind of messing around by sticking his leg out. I don't think he was really, like, attempting to do that in my recollection of this play. There was a question of offsides on that play. The ref didn't call it as Karius picked it up. And then Karius was kind of just, like, figuring out if he wanted to restart it or not. And Benzema had just stayed right in front of him. So that one, it was really a really bad mistake, but it was one that I think is slightly more forgivable because they didn't really know what was going on, and it was really lucky that Benzema even scored. The last one, I will say, is harder to defend because, as a former goalkeeper, the knuckle that was on that shot from Gareth Bale, I've seen Bale hit those a lot. He used to take the free kicks for Tottenham. We haven't really seen him do it much with Madrid because Ronaldo takes all the free kicks. But he can hit those so hard and with so much dip and swerve. And that ball knuckled right before it got to him. I've seen a lot of shots like that from players in high school who could do that. And in my experience, not really being able to block those in high school, I can't imagine it coming from Gareth Bale, because I'm sure Bale's shot was even harder and faster and knuckled even in a stronger fashion than the ones that I've faced before. So, and I've let in some similar howlers, if you will. So I don't know. I think the first one was worse, in my opinion, because, like, it was just so much more easy to avoid, I think. Whereas the second one, like, clearly caught him a little off guard. But honestly, I was just mad that was what made the difference in this game. Bale had a beautiful goal. Liverpool would have played much better if Salah wasn't hurt most of the game. That was unfortunate for me because I wanted to see Liverpool give them a challenge. And it really just felt like it was a little unfair. And Liverpool was behind the eight ball with those unlucky goals that they conceded. So, you know, unfortunate for Karius. Apparently, he received some death threats on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Just at like, all.
I'm not surprised. That's the, like, I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised. You know, it's Twitter and it's soccer fans, of course. That being said, you know, do better. But yeah, I don't know. That was a pretty wild game. But we digress. We'll get back to the picks here. Anyway, we both got that one right. In the end. So then we picked four MLS games, Henry. I don't know why we did that, but we did. First one we picked was Real Salt Lake versus Seattle Sounders. Both picked the Sounders, and Salt Lake actually won that one, so we were both wrong. Tough win to go into Seattle and get the dub. I was thinking Sounders at home seemed like a pretty safe bet to me, but Salt Lake, props to them. The next two games we picked were the New England Revolution playing the Whitecaps, and then Philadelphia Union and New York Red Bulls. Henry, you picked the Union and the Whitecaps. I picked draws in both games. And, what do you know? Both of them ended as draws. Union Red Bulls, 0-0. Whitecaps Revolution was 3-3. A thrilling draw in that one. But I actually got both of those games right. And you got them wrong.
The draws are just the worst. I refuse to pick the draws.
Perhaps you were smarter better.
I'm just a little sad about it. It's fine. I hate picking soccer, as I've voiced many times on this podcast before.
Yeah, well, there weren't a lot of games to pick from last week. That's why we picked softball, NCAA softball at NCAA.
Look, softball treated me well. I have nothing to complain about. I mean, I'm just sad that it's not that I lost. It's the way in which I lost.
Yeah.
You know?
Fair enough. And then the next game, which was DC United and LAFC, we both picked a winner, and then it ended up as a draw. So we both got that game wrong, as it finished 1-1.
So many draws.
You know, DC United probably should have done better there. I'm not going to lie, Henry. That should have been a pick that went your way, because LAFC was up 1-0, but then got a red card, and DC United played up a man for a whole second half and only was able to get the one goal back. So that's too bad for them. Anyway, that rounded off our MLS picks. However, there was one more soccer pick. The English Championship playoff, for those who don't know, the third and fourth seeds, not seeds, but the third and fourth place teams that finish in the championship every year play a play-in game to see who gets that third promotion spot and moves up to the Premier League. This is worth roughly $200 million for the club. So this is, when you talk about stakes, I mean, this may not be for a championship, but this is just about the biggest stakes you can get as a club. Outside of that. So in that game, it was Aston Villa versus Fulham. I picked Aston Villa. Henry picked Fulham. And what do you know? Fulham came out on top. And it was a 1-0 performance Fulham actually playing down a man for most of the second half, able to pull off the 1-0 victory and move on into the Premier League. So good job there, Henry. That wraps up the soccer picks. Henry, you went 2-4. I went 3-3 on the soccer picks. And then finally, we picked one NCAA women's lacrosse game. It was the semifinal, and it was kind of the two best teams that were left. Boston College pulls the upset over Maryland, who I listed as two-goal favorites. We both had picked Maryland. We both were wrong, unfortunately, despite my labeling by some at Northwestern as a lacrosse expert, which I still maintain is false. I proved it there as I got that game wrong. So anyway, all in all, Henry, 7-5. Good job. Really killed it on the softball and the NBA picks. I went 6-6, pretty much 500 throughout. And for the final standings on the year, not final standings, but basically we're getting there. I'm down 3 games. Henry, you are 46-48-1, just 2 games under 500. I was 43-51-1, so 8 games under 500, 3 games behind Henry. So I gotta have some serious catch-up work in the 1 or 2 weeks that we have left of picks. That took a while, but that's what happens when you have 12 games to pick. Let's move on now, Henry. Let's talk about the NBA. 2 game sevens to recap. That's part of the reason we also didn't do a show yesterday is that we wanted to wait until so that we could recap game 7 of the Rockets Warriors series as well. So let's start there, Henry. Game was last night. And it seemed like, much like game 6, the main story was that Houston was up. They had a chance here. And then they just really in this game went very cold. 27 straight missed 3-pointers. That set an NBA record. They had 3 players who missed at least 9 3-pointers in Harden, Ariza, and Gordon. I mean, would they have ever done anything different here? Was this a case of, you know, as they say, living and dying by the three?
I mean, that's what it was. You know, I heard a lot of people that I was watching the game with were saying, why don't they take the ball to the basket more? One, I thought they did to a certain degree. Eric Gordon did drive a lot in this game in particular. Ariza, not quite as much. And obviously, that's part of Harden's game as well. But look, there just comes a point when you just got to make the basketball shots. And it's not like they were just jacking up horrible shots. Like, they took so many good shots for missing 27 straight threes. So many uncontested threes from good three-point shooters. Like, Eric Gordon is not a scrub. That dude makes a high percentage of open looks. Trevor Ariza from the corner this year, really high percentage shooter and pretty decent overall. PJ Tucker, great from the corner shooting. They missed everything. And Harden missed everything. The Warriors did a nice job collapsing, but this it hurts because Houston really played a game that they could have won. And I didn't think that was possible. And the Warriors deserve praise for how they came out in the second half, but at the same time, I kind of think they just got lucky. Like, yes, their third quarter performance was good, but I don't think it was like some of the third quarter performances they had earlier in the series. I think they got really lucky in this game. I think they should have lost. And it's just sad that Houston missed so many open looks.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think the only person you could have a little bit of qualms with was James Harden. I feel like there were a lot of three-pointers that he just kind of slung up trying to draw foul calls that just seemed a little unnecessary to me. That's also part of his game, though. So I guess when you're talking about would Houston have done anything differently, I don't know that Harden would have really done that differently. But personally, I would have liked to see a few less of those that he chucked up. That being said, all those other ones you mentioned, Gordon, Ariza, you know, PJ Tucker, all those guys are good three-point shooters. There's no way that if you played another 50 games that they would ever repeat this performance of missing 27 in a row. I think they took like 44 threes on the game. They were like
7 of 44,
which is, you know, horrible, but it's not that weird. I mean, that's what the Rockets do. And, you know, it's very much live and die by the three. They died by it in this game. It's unfortunate, but I respect the fact that they kept shooting. I mean, you know, as Jamal Crawford says, I'd rather be 0 for 9 than 0 for 2 and stop shooting, because that means I didn't stop shooting. So I respect that, and I don't think they could have done anything differently there. I agree that it's a game they definitely could have won. And also, it's like, I think taking those threes doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad strategy. I think some people were disappointed. They're like, oh, you're not making the threes. Well, like, you know, go inside more or try to drive to the hoop, get some fouls. The thing about the Rockets is that they're also set up that if they miss those threes, they're going for rebounds. It's a lot easier to rebound a missed three than it is to rebound, you know, a layup or a missed two or something, because you get those longer rebounds. And they got a lot of second chances on offense. That's how they stayed in this game for some periods, despite that abysmal shooting performance. So I don't really think it was a bad strategy by them. I think it makes a lot of sense. And as you mentioned, I think just a little bit lucky if you're a Warriors fan that you scrape by with that win. It's not like they played particularly outstanding basketball. I mean, Durant heated up late. You know, Curry made a couple of incredible plays, some good fast break stuff, but I don't know. It kind of feels like the Rockets choked this one away a little bit. Although I think the one thing that we have to mention about this game, obviously Chris Paul didn't play, and that certainly made a big difference in Game 6 and 7. Henry, do you think the Rockets win the series if Chris Paul's in these games?
I do. You know, it's tough to know for sure, and I've heard a lot of people kind of waver on it, but I think they would have won. I just do. They were up 17 points in Game 6. I think they would have won that game if Chris Paul was on the floor. A lot of it to me, too, is not how well Chris Paul is plays, but it's you have to look at who Houston had to put on the floor instead. We saw Joe Johnson and Ryan Anderson play for the first time in Game 7 in real minutes in the series, and they were atrocious. They couldn't play. I mean, Ryan Anderson, the Warriors just went at him with Steph Curry. It was tough to watch.
His ankle's broken.
Yeah, he just can't move. And he had a sprained ankle, which is part of the reason he hasn't been playing as much. He's not super mobile to begin with. But you give that man a sprained ankle, and he's really limited.
Yeah.
And Joe Johnson, you know, I joked, is a fossil on defense. So it was
Joe, baby.
It was tough to watch, but they had to play those guys because they just didn't have enough guys in the rotation without Chris Paul playing big minutes. I mean, they were playing seven guys-ish, but Gerald Green was really playing like 15 minutes a game.
Yeah.
So they were almost playing six with Chris Paul, and that just without him wasn't sustainable. So I think they would have won. I just do. I also think like he's the one guy on this team that makes mid-range jump shots. And look, as I said, I don't fault them for taking those 27 missed threes because they were open shots. But he's the one who could, you know, attack the defense in a different area of the floor. And they just didn't have that option. It wasn't there. And also from a leadership perspective, I mean, yes, he's barking out things from the bench and all that, but there's nothing quite like having a point guard on the floor to settle things down. And frankly, I just don't trust James Harden as that guy, and I do trust Chris Paul as that guy, and I think over time that's bared out, especially in clutch situations. So yeah, I think they would have won. I really do. I think they could have won anyway. I'm upset that they didn't win last night. It was sad, but I really think they would have won if they had Chris Paul.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the last point of they needed somebody to just calm them down a little bit in both of those games because it seemed like a lot of the mistakes kept compounding each other, and that's where you can really get on a downward spiral. As a sports team, you know, when you start missing shots, you start turning the ball over, stuff like that, because turnovers were another huge problem for Houston. You know, it wasn't just the missed shots. Harden had a lot of turnovers. There were a lot of just lazy errant passes that ended up going the other way, and the Warriors are so deadly in transition, both with three-pointers and going to the basket. So you know, that definitely contributed a lot, too. And I think with Chris Paul in there, that just isn't going to happen as much. I mean, he's very, very steady with the ball, always has a very good assist-to-turnover ratio. And like you said, it's that veteran presence. He's been there. He can calm it down. He's so used to handling the ball and being that point guard. There were a lot of times where Eric Gordon had to bring the ball up because James Harden just couldn't do it every time. Or you know, they were really sticking somebody tight to James Harden. And that's just a severe disadvantage having Chris Paul on the floor. I also agree. I really wanted them to win this. And they should have. I mean, that's the thing that I think you have to be so disappointed if you're a Rockets fan or a Rockets player, you know, whoever, about the series is that I think the Rockets really, really should have won this. They're going to leave feeling like they had two great chances to win this. And they definitely choked in this series. You can say whatever you want about the Warriors. They're a great team. They did not win this series. The Rockets lost this series. And I would have a very tough time trying to change my mind about that.
I 100% agree. And I think what makes it even more disappointing is just, I don't think anybody thought the Rockets were really going to be in this position. But they were. I think going into the series, pretty much everybody was like, yeah, they'll challenge the Warriors because they've got good personnel and, you know, their roster's basically just meant to play Golden State and all of that stuff. But then the series unfolded, and especially in games 4 and 5, when you were like, whoa, I've never seen the Warriors look like that. At least for me, as somebody who's watched them a lot and watched them just dominate very good basketball teams a lot, they just look so uncomfortable. That I was like, wow, I've never seen a team do that to them. That a team with four all-stars on it, to look that out of sorts. I really thought the Rockets could do it and would do it. And it's tough. It's tough that they didn't. Especially as somebody would like to see, you know, something different other than a Cavs-Warriors final. I was heartbroken.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about that more as we continue to talk about this, but yeah, same thing once again, and this really felt like the team and the year that the breakthrough could have been made in the West to stop the Warriors, and it just, unfortunately, couldn't quite pull through, could the Rockets. So let's switch over. We never got to talk about Cavs-Celtics Game 7 either, so let's talk about that one for a little bit before we preview the finals, Henry. And I'll ask a similar question to what we were talking about with the Warriors and the Rockets. Did Cleveland win this series throughout those last two games, or did Boston lose it? Because this is a very similar situation where Boston up 3-2 had chances to close out the series and couldn't quite do it. What do you think, Henry?
This one was a little bit more, I think, a combination of the two, but I kind of think Boston lost it, which will probably not be a popular opinion among my Cleveland brethren, because LeBron James was great, but Boston just should have been up more in the first half. They just... When they went into that halftime only up single digits, it felt like such a sigh of relief for Cavs fans. Because LeBron was great at the beginning of this game. But no other Cav was around in the first half. There's some stat that, like, LeBron made 8 passes to uncontested shots. And the Cavaliers made 1 in the first half. Outside, you know, in his supporting cast. And Boston, had they just shot better on threes, they were 7 for 39. I believe, almost as bad as the Rockets, despite the fact that the Rockets missed 27 straight threes. If they had just made a couple more of those, I think they could have buried the Cavs early. And the Cavs all of a sudden just, like, they kind of hung around, and then they came to life in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, this was definitely a Game 7 where I remember turning it on. I had some stuff going on Sunday night, and I had just gotten back from trying to fix my phone. I had a soccer game. And I come back, and it's the third quarter, and it's like 44 to 41. And I was like, okay, what is going on here? I don't know what's been happening in this game, but, like, this is so low scoring. Because I've gotten used to today's NBA where it's like, I'm expecting 60s by the second quarter. And I turned the game on, and I was like, wow, this is super low scoring. But I knew immediately that benefited the Cavs because, obviously, we've said they've had trouble trying to score as, you know, with people outside of LeBron. And LeBron obviously put up a fantastic performance. 30-plus points in that one, and if your team's only going to score 80, 30 from LeBron is probably going to be enough to win the game. And so I knew he was going to have that kind of performance, and such a low-scoring game, I think that benefited the Cavs. As you mentioned, the poor shooting performance from Boston was very important in determining this game. It felt like they definitely had those opportunities, I mean, similar to what we talked about with Houston. But I will say that in this game, I also think it's more even, and I actually would lean slightly on the side of the Cavs winning this game. I think they played really well. Obviously, we knew what the formula was going to be. I don't think anybody was surprised by the fact that it was pretty much all LeBron. But, you know, they had enough help around them, especially playing without Kevin Love. I was really impressed with Cleveland's ability to stay in that game and obviously ultimately win that. I don't know. I think the Cavs deserve a little more credit than the Warriors do for getting this far. That being said, you could definitely credit them as being a little bit lucky as well that Boston missed so many shots. But to me, the big difference came down to in this game is a lot of Boston's rookies started looking like rookies in a Game 7. They had never been there before, and that's understandable. You know, LeBron probably didn't play the greatest in his first Game 7. He's a historically great Game 7 performer, but, you know, anybody who lacks that experience is going to have a tough time in Game 7. It's just a different atmosphere. Even though they were at home, there's just an immense pressure, and you could tell that it really got to the Celtics, whereas obviously LeBron, unfazed by it, you know, and clutches out the win.
Yeah, I mean, LeBron was fantastic. There's no doubt about that. There's a stat floating around out there. The Cavs made 30 field goals in this game. One. That's just very few.
That's not a lot at all, no.
LeBron assisted, scored, or had the secondary assist on 25 out of the 30.
Oof.
So basically, the Cavs made 5 buckets all games that weren't the result of a LeBron James play. And, you know, and that's a testament to how good of a performance this was by him. But at the same time, he needed the role players at the end of this game. The role players, everybody not named LeBron, scored 16 points in the fourth quarter for the Cavaliers, which was huge, seeing as a team, they only scored, I think, 35 or 40 other than him. For the entire game. So J.R. Smith finally came alive a little bit. Jeff Green hit a corner three that I think was really the time where the Cavs were like, oh, we got this. And I just think, I don't know, going back to that, did the Cavs win or did Boston lose it? I just felt like Boston let the Cavs hang around long enough that I thought that their chance in this was to bury the Cavs and perhaps win the mental game. And I think the opposite happened. By missing so many shots, they just lost the mental games. That finally the Cavaliers role players are like, all right, LeBron saved us. We're here. We're fine. And they started making shots, and then the pressure just kind of melted away.
Yeah, I mean, it did. I thought, I mean, there were a few moments that they could have definitely taken advantage of that home crowd and that momentum. One that I think, you know, we just have to say something about is that Jason Tatum dunk on LeBron, which, like, You don't see LeBron get put on a poster very often. And Jason Tatum took his moment and really, I mean, he got all up in LeBron's face afterwards, bumped him. Wow. I was blown away by that, frankly. I would never do that to LeBron James. I just wouldn't.
You know, Tatum's a confident rookie. Tatum played a great game. Look, he was the only Celtic that showed up for this game. He played phenomenal. LeBron, you know, LeBron has got a lot, you know, it's not as apparent now, but it still is. If you watch when LeBron jumps off his left leg, he just kind of has faith that nobody can jump higher than him. And Tatum did. Tatum did on that one. Terry Rozier did not later in the game.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the thing where LeBron James, when he jumps off his left leg, and it was so apparent earlier in his career when he used to just, like, when he didn't have a post-up game yet, and he kind of would just drive and literally just jump off his left leg and just over people to finish shots. And, yeah, he kind of just thought he was going to block Tatum, and oops.
Yeah.
Didn't work. Did not work.
Tatum put him on a poster. That was one of the better dunks I've seen in quite some time. I think just simply for the fact that it came over LeBron, it's just like, you just don't see that. But hey, you know, I guess shout out to Tatum for taking his moment. I mean, not many people can say they had the opportunity to stare down LeBron and bump him after a dunk. So I guess, you know, props to Tatum for that. The one thing I will say that just like, it just really struck me of that play though, is like, I was immediately thinking, oh, get the ball to LeBron in the next possession. I want to see him like match up with Tatum and like take him to the house. But then he just like didn't even go after Tatum at all after that. And I think that's, you know, obviously it fits very well in LeBron James' persona of just being, you know, an unselfish player and always being about the team and just doing his job, however, you know, large that job may be for the Cavs. And, like, he just didn't even care. He was just like, all right, good job, Brooke. Good dunk. And he's like, I'm just going to keep playing my game. I'm going to keep dominating you guys. I'm not going to try to switch on to you. I'm not going to try to only defend you. And I feel like that even got in Tatum's head a little bit. The fact that LeBron didn't even react to it, which I think, A, is just really classy, and B, is really smart, and C, is just really rare with NBA players. I mean, the egos are just so big in the NBA, you just, like, you expect them to go back and forth. And I kind of wanted to see it, honestly, but didn't happen. But anyway, I digress. However, Henry, we should preview the finals a little bit, because they start on Thursday night. Obviously, we'll talk about Game 1 on Friday, but we have no more opportunities to preview them before the finals starts. So let's do that a little bit. I think the big thing, first of all, same matchup. Same matchup was 4 years in a row now. I can't even remember. I mean, it just feels like, you know, it's the same. It's always the same. Are you disappointed in that? A. B. How do you think this is going to be different from previous matchups?
Am I disappointed? I mean, that's a tough question because as a Cavs fan, I'm obviously not disappointed that the Cavaliers are there 4 years in a row.
Sure, sure.
Am I disappointed that they're facing the Warriors 4 years in a row? Of course. I really thought the Warriors had a chance to lose, and obviously I think the Cavs would have had a better chance against the Rockets. So yeah, I'm disappointed. I'm also disappointed in the way that the Warriors got there. Look, they played the Spurs without Kawhi Leonard. They played the Pelicans without DeMarcus Cousins. And then they played the Rockets where Chris Paul didn't play in Game 6 and 7. And that's no fault of their own. Look, they don't get to control those things, but at the same time, it's kind of like, man, that's just, like, a team that just doesn't need any more things to go their way got everything to still go their way. It's like, really? We couldn't get a little lucky to, like, knock them off? Yeah, that's tough. That's tough. Especially seeing the Cavs just, like, fight through teams, like, game after game. It's like, ah, man. Yeah, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, as a neutral, I'm very disappointed, frankly. I will say, and I said this last show too, is that I really wanted LeBron to make the finals because, personally, I'm a little more invested in it that way. I talked about why I liked the NHL final matchup so much, and it's because I am invested in the storylines. And while I'm more invested in the sport of basketball and probably would watch the finals either way, I am much more inclined to make this must-see viewing if LeBron is in it, simply because of the narratives that surround LeBron, this matchup specifically with the Warriors, etc. So I'm glad from that perspective that LeBron and the Cavs are in it. I'm not really thrilled to see the Warriors again. I feel like this matchup has just been overanalyzed. Obviously, we are people who do that. It has been talked about so much, and it's just a matchup that, I don't know, I'm just a little sick of at this point. That being said, I want to see LeBron take him on again, and I want to see it happen. So I'm kind of mixed feelings on the matchup, Henry. Here's an interesting question I have for you. We were talking about this as the Cavs advanced, and we were talking about the fact that it's Cavs-Warriors again. Do you think it would be worse for LeBron's legacy? We have some LeBron haters in my friends group. Do you think it'd be worse for LeBron's legacy if he were to lose to the Warriors again, or if he had played the Rockets and lost?
I think the second one would have been worse, because I think people would, you know, point. I think any reasonable person who looks at this Warriors team versus LeBron understands that he's is so outmatched, it's unbelievable. And it's much like the 07 finals, where I would be shocked if any intelligent basketball fan holds this one against LeBron James. Had they lost to the Rockets, I could see people doing that. I think you could make a very similar case that the Rockets, frankly, have a lot better personnel than the Cavaliers do around James Harden and Chris Paul. But I think that one would be one where people would be like, hey, James Harden's not a top three player in the NBA. Chris Paul's not a top three player in the NBA. You know, you got to beat them. Find a way. That's one where I could see. The Warriors, I mean, look, how far do you have to go down the list before you get... Who is Kevin Love better than on the Warriors? Durant? No. Thompson? No. Curry? No. I wish he was better than Draymond Green. No.
Probably not, no.
So you get... So yeah, LeBron is the best player on the floor. The next four are Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And then where does Andre Iguodala fit in? Is he right after Kevin Love? Is Kyle Korver better than Andre Iguodala? Or George Hill? I'm not really sure. So they probably have five out of the best seven.
Yeah.
Like, that's a tough formula to go against.
No, it definitely is. I mean, look, I am certainly somebody who does not... I mean, and I'm also a LeBron supporter, but I don't hold any loss to the Warriors against him. But I just think it's interesting. I do agree, first of all, that it would be worse if he loses to the Rockets than if he were to lose to the Warriors again. I do think it's very interesting, though, how this narrative could shift. Because, you know, we talked about rubber matches earlier as we intro'd the show. If he wins this series, he's going to be 2-2 against the best team ever. Essentially doing it for a lot of that by himself. Obviously had big performances from Kyrie and Love that first time around. But especially if he were to win this one, really doing it without a lot of help. That is so massively different than 1-3 against the Warriors, I feel like. I feel like it's just such a big swing when the series is at 2-1 at the moment, as far as the finals are concerned. So I'm really interested to see how that narrative shifts. And again, that's why I'm really interested in this series, is because there's so much, you know, on the line, legacy-wise, especially for LeBron, but also for the Warriors as well, because I think, you know, three titles is where you can be considered a dynasty. Especially in a short period of time. Yes, they've made the finals all those years, and even if they lost this year, you could still probably consider them a dynasty. But to me, I think to really solidify your place in history, three straight championships, or three championships in a short period of time, is some weird benchmark because we like the number three. But it's something to me. And I think that would be a huge step for the Warriors as well. So I'm really interested just in the kind of big picture basketball history, Hall of Fame, whatever implications of the series, beyond just, you know, the X's and O's.
The only thing is about this series is, you know, everybody's like Cavs Warriors Part 4. These have been four very different matchups. The Cavs played the Warriors the first time in the first year of the Splash Brothers without Kyrie and Kevin Love in a much different environment. Then they played the 73-win Warriors, still minus Kevin Durant, when LeBron James was unstoppable in games 5, 6, and 7 in the 3-1 comeback. Then last year, Kyrie Irving was on the Cavaliers. And Kevin Durant was, you know, in the first year with the Golden State team. So I think this has all been, you know, I think this is all very different from this matchup. And unfortunately, I think it's sliding in the direction of it's only getting further, the two teams are only getting further apart, and it's not going in my Cavaliers' direction. I think people undersell how good the Cavs team was last year with Kyrie Irving on it. That team didn't get touched in the Eastern Conference. They lost one game. I mean, what I understand the Celtics team was different last year. What they did to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals last year was embarrassing. They beat that team by 40 points twice. That was a one seed.
Honestly, like, I forgot about that.
And then, it took them the single best shooting game in NBA history to win one game off the Warriors. So, yeah, I'm not feeling great about the series, but I think it's an entirely different thing than we've seen the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I wanted to get at a little bit. So I'm glad you said it, Henry, is that all these have been different. For everybody wants to say it's the same every year. If you're a true NBA fan, you'll understand the difference in these four games and why each series has had its own unique storylines, its own interests, its own, stuff. It's been a matchup that has evolved over those 4 years, and as you mentioned, I think that adds a layer of intrigue for me to the series as well. I don't know. Part of me is just like, this is boring. And then I try to reason myself into it being a little different, a little whatever. But I just really, I'm going to be honest, Henry, and this is unfortunately what I'll have to close with because we don't have a lot of time left. I just don't see a way that the Cavs win this series. And I really hate to say it.
Oh, I agree with you. And I think that is what makes it boring. I think if the Cavs and the Warriors part four, if we played three close series and the same teams were back, I think it would be just as interesting. I don't think the part four is the issue. I think it's that most neutral fans look at this and are like, how the hell are the Cavaliers going to... I mean, much less win the series. How are they going to win two games in this series? How are they going to win one game in this series?
I don't know. I mean, LeBron is the only thing we can point to.
I mean, like, people are saying, like, yeah, LeBron will get one. Like, are we sure?
I don't know.
Like, is Kevin Love even going to play? Where are the role players for the Cavaliers? I'm pretty sure J.R. Smith's ghost is still somewhere in Boston. I have no idea what's happened to J.R. Smith. He had to make three shots for the Cavaliers to get a Game 7 victory. All it took was three. I mean, like, I don't see how this happens. Maybe Andre Iguodala doesn't play all series, and he's been the best LeBron defender of any Warrior, and other than that, no, I've got nothing. I truly have nothing. Like, they need, like, literally Durant, Curry, or Thompson to get injured.
Yeah. I mean, that's really the only thing that could kind of even the playing field at this point, just given how good this
works. I think if Iguodala doesn't play all series, they could win one game. And that's about it.
Yeah.
Because I think without Iguodala, they're clearly not as good on offense. You can help off Draymond. And that's the other thing. Draymond has to keep not shooting the ball well. Draymond has not shot the ball well in the Rocket series, but he did previously in the playoffs. So he needs to not shoot well. I mean, just so many things have to go right for them to win a game. And that's not even the series. I mean, like, is J.R. Smith going to hit 10 threes in a game like him and Korver? I don't know. I don't see it. I just don't.
Yeah. I got to be honest. I don't either. I mean... And the sad thing, too, is that the Warriors showed some weakness against the Rockets. They looked really bad in Game 6 and Game 7, but they still won, A. And B, now they have time to look at that film, to write everything that they got wrong. And nothing that I've seen so far from this Warriors team makes me think that they won't change some things after that, and won't get better, and won't just kind of annihilate this Cavs team, unfortunately. But it remains to be seen. Obviously, we'll have something to talk about on Friday, depending on what happens in Game 1. I think you clearly see where we stand on what might happen there in Game 1. But we wanted to get a little finals preview out there, talk about the Game 7s. Didn't have time to catch up with any NHL today. We will do that on Friday, as we don't have 12 picks to recap. That unfortunately took a while today. But that being said, that's what we got today. We got 3 minutes to run to class, so we're going to get on out of here. But thanks for listening. It's been fun. And until Friday, may your teams win. May your rivals lose, and may the sports be with you.